we get to put the Titans behind us for a few weeks after last week, but now we got the NBA draft, the Grizzlies, the conversation with Vanderbilt baseball, and more. But as always, welcome to the show.
Well, my pleasure, Johnny, because, yeah, in just over about less than an hour, the NBA draft kicks off, and, you know, some of the fun gets started. And, you know, the Grizzlies, you know, we all expect them to take Ja Morant of Murray State. You know, they traded away Mike Conley yesterday. It's fun. I love the NBA, Johnny. You know, they make all these deals, and some of these deals they can't comment on until July 6th when the new league year starts. But, you know, the Grizzlies make a deal with the Jazz to send Mike Conley to them for a trio of players, including Grayson Allen and Jay Crowder. And then suddenly, but there's draft picks, and they can't talk about it till July 6th. So tonight when the Utah Jazz go on the clock at number 23, guess what? Whoever is picked in that spot is supposed to be coming to Memphis, but that won't be official until July 6th. So I just, it's like, come on, can't we? We know what you're doing. Just go ahead and do it.
Hey, by the way, Grayson Allen, if I'm his rep, his agent, I'm trying to find a deal for Grayson Allen as far as endorsing a travel company, because he certainly knows about trips. Get it? Get
your... But so,
thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so I see Grayson Allen. Kyle Korver, he's been in the NBA for, what, 50 years now? How many teams has he played for? But he knows how to shoot the three.
And that's something that the Grizzlies have been looking up for ad infinitum, pretty much since they've been in Memphis. And every time they grasp for a player who's going to fix that problem, it ends up being a mirage. So, and here's the thing. It's a brand-new front office in Memphis. So, you know, some of these players they acquired, I'm not sure that they don't flip somebody, move something. This is still a very fluid situation with this front office, brand new coach they introduced a week ago, and Taylor Jenkins, somebody they hired from the Mike Budenholzer tree. Not bad considering he had the best team in the East this year in the Bucks, and did pretty well with the Atlanta Hawks as well. So, you know, until they get into training camp, I'm looking at this Grizzlies roster thinking the only true comfortable guys, Jaren Jackson Jr., their pick at 4-0. Excuse me, their pick at number 4 overall last year, and whoever they take tonight at number 2 overall, excuse me, Ja Morant. So other than that, they've made it very clear. They're working to rebuild this, and they see it as a long-term situation. So, this is the start of something, not the midway trip for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I know you've covered the Grizzlies forever, and it's hard to believe. It just seems like time
has... I'm not that old, Johnny.
Well, I know, but it seems like time has flown by with this Grizzlies. Well, think about it. The Grizzlies have not been in Memphis forever either, so...
2001.
Exactly, but the fact that we're talking about 12 years for Michael Conley with the Grizzlies, and, you know, here's a guy that, when you look at the career leader list, he's a career leader in points, assists, three-pointers made, games played. It's hard to believe, but it just seems like just yesterday when he was a part of this team, but 12 years later, now getting traded to Utah.
Well, absolutely. You know, he was the guy that had before Jaren Jackson Jr. last year, had been the last number 4 pick overall. And, you know, they tried to get rid of him at one point. And Lionel Hollins, you know, fought to keep him there and helped him develop and grow into the all. You know, here's the thing. It's a very sore itch with the Grizzlies fans that he's never been acknowledged as an all-star. And it's a challenge of him playing in the West where, you know, there's guys like Steph Curry. I mean, that's a loaded position. Chris Paul, you name it. Now maybe going to Utah where he's going to be surrounded by, on a team that, you know, let's face it, they think that they're in a position with Conley to maybe do some serious things, might help elevate his profile a little bit. But, you know, he's gone from a guy that they tried to get rid of to a huge piece of a team that went to 7 straight playoff appearances, a run that was as good. Only the Spurs and the Atlanta Hawks had better, active, longer playoff streaks than the Grizzlies during that stretch. And, you know, now that's the standard that the Grizzlies now, their new front office, that they're trying to get back to and see if they can, you know, mimic that again in the future.
By the way, you were talking about earlier that the trade that we can't really totally say it has happened until July 6th when we get the new calendar year working as far as the NBA clock is concerned. I have an MBA. I feel like I need to go back to school and get a doctoral degree to figure out exactly what this trade entirely means. It's not the players exchange. I get all of that. I understand The Grizzlies also get the 23rd pick in tonight's draft to go along with their number two overall pick. The part that gets confusing is the fact that they also get a future first round pick, and you try to figure this one out. It could mean a late lottery pick in 2020 or 2021, or become a lightly protected pick from 22 to 24.
Well, and let's not forget the Grizzlies still owe a first-round draft pick to Boston to satisfy the Jeff Green trade of a few years ago. And boy, does that one look worse with every day that goes by.
Absolutely. But we mentioned earlier that, you know, first, Zion Williamson, no doubt he's going to New Orleans. And with Michael Conley being traded to Utah yesterday, you could bet the house, the farm, everything. The Grizzlies at number two. Any reason to believe that they would not take Morant at this point? Because I would push all in on Morant.
I'll say this. There's a lot of people that think that Morant is the best player in this draft, even with Zion Williamson in there, because, you know, let's face it, Williamson, he's a big guy. You know, Morant, he's fast. He's, you know, he's the first guy since assists started being kept in 1983-84 to average 20 points and 10 assists in a season. And, you know, you watch him in person, he's just got some court vision. And, you know, no offense to the guys at Murray State. I know they won an NCAA tournament game beating Marquette. But, you know, when you watch him on the court, you could just imagine what, you know, some better talent around him could catch some of his passes down into the paint and finish some things. So, Jaren Jackson Jr., he's going to have a chance to be on the finishing end of those. And with Adrian Wojnarowski reporting now that Atlanta is traded for the fourth pick from New Orleans, you know, there were some reports earlier today, Johnny, some speculation that the Pelicans were trying to get to two so that they could get R.J. Barrett. So this move seems to make it pretty clear that, Atlanta's now moving up into number four. So if it's not Ja Morant, let's just put it this way. That's what my person down in Memphis has written and prepared to send out. We have some other prep in case we need it, but, you know, that's who we're expecting. That's who people in Memphis are expecting. And honestly, Johnny, Ja Morant is the name that has people tied to, you know, as Grizzly fans, Grizzly media, that we've been expecting since the Grizzlies somehow miraculously rose up to number two in the draft lottery back in May.
Yeah, there was still parts of me that was hoping that maybe the Grizzlies could have found a way for Morant and Conley to work together in the backcourt, but now that that's not a possibility, does this, if they do take Morant tonight, will this speed up the process for Memphis being a perennial playoff team?
Here's the thing. They've got to put a few more pieces around there. You know, Jonas Valla, I know I butchered that name. He apparently declined his player option for this next season. There's reports that the Memphis Grizzlies want to sign him to a longer-term deal. If he comes back, he was a guy who was getting double-doubles for them. Pretty solid center down in the paint. That could help them. But it's how they put the pieces around them. They still have a very young roster now with Conley being, you know, traded away. So how do those guys continue developing? Can Taylor Jenkins, you know, grow them? It sounds like they want to play, you know, the kind of basketball we're seeing more and more around the league. You know, that grit and grind, gone. Forget it. It's no more. But Johnny, it's the NBA. You know, for every move that you make right, you're penalized very hard for every step you take wrong. So very curious to see how quickly they put this all back together.
How about this? They take Morant with number two pick, and now they've got the 23rd pick from Utah. There's a name that probably will still be out there. How about Grant Williams from Tennessee?
That would be interesting. I know there's questions around the league about, his ability to step outside and shoot. We saw him do that fairly well on occasion, but, we're going to have to wait and see. And here's the thing. Because this is a new front office, you know, the guy who's, you know, the new vice president of basketball operations, Zach Kleiman, he's 30. You know, there's no track record for what they're going to do. Now, Tayshaun Prince is part of the decision-making process down there. But we just don't know what they're going to do. We don't know, you know, going to Taylor Jenkins is one sign, but, you know, let's face it, everything they're doing, we can't gauge it against the past. Chris Wallace, who made so many decisions drafting young athletic guys with injury histories, he is now a scout. He's not making those decisions. So I'm waiting to see what they do, because every step is going to, is going to lead us down a path, but it's all new, Johnny. We're going to have to wait and see.
You know, we look at Vanderbilt baseball on Sunday, big win against Louisville. Austin Martin, two home runs. I mean, it's a rarity when we're talking about one player hitting two home runs in the same game in a College World Series. And for Vanderbilt, all they had to do was wait for the very next game for it to happen again, with senior Stephen Scott doing the same thing yesterday. It was huge. He got the first run for Vanderbilt with a solo blast, part of that big five-run outburst as well in the fifth inning, as Vanderbilt hung on for the 6-3 victory over Mississippi State, and now just one win away from advancing to the College World Series finals next week.
Absolutely, and let's not forget Kumar Rocker, who comes in off of his no-no and strikes out six and goes six innings, and you know, had a really strong outing for them as well. So, and really helped them, you know, kind of preserve that pitching staff. Let's face it, you know, it's a different person who steps up almost every game for the Commodores. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago about that batting order. I mean, you know, in the regional, it was Julian Infante who was the MVP. And then Austin Martin helped, you know, knock off the clincher in the super regional with that, you know, leadoff hit home run. Then he does it again to kick off the College World Series. TD Ameritrade is supposed to be a tough place to hit home runs. Well, tell that to the Commodores. So it's just, it's fun to watch this team grind on. They're 6-1 in the month of June, and I think 32 of their last 36. So they're on a roll, and you know, if they can win on Friday night, then guess what? The more games you win, the fewer games you have to play at this point. And you know, if they win on Friday night, then they're playing for a title in a best of three series starting Monday night.
Yeah, you threw out that record. In fact, that I actually was, you know, they were 24-8 after Kumar Rocker lost to Georgia the weekend of the first weekend of April. So 24-8 team at that point, now 56-11. We're talking about 32-3 in their last 35 games. And Rocker, by the way, he's won 9 of his last 10 decisions.
Exactly. It's called peaking at the right time. You know, there's a reason why Tim Corbin had Rocker, you know, pitching on weekends, and then he moved him in April, in the middle of April, moved him up to the Saturday starter. And all the young man has done is simply step up and show why Tim Corbin had that confidence to put him in there. And the benefit is, you know, Tim Corbin now has the choice for Friday night. You know, do you go with Mason Hickman, who's usually your weekend starter? You know, he started the clincher of the Super Regional. Or do you go with Drake Fellows, making sure you win to get to the deciding series? You know, he's got a lot of options now. And the reason is, you know, one, Drake Fellows pitched so well in the opener of this College World Series, and then Rocker followed up with another strong performance. So I tell you, it's just fun to watch this team right now.
Teresa, and obviously this will be a conversation piece, especially more so after next week, depending on how this season plays out, because right now you can count on one hand the remaining games for Vanderbilt, no matter what happens, whether we're talking about national championship or their season comes to an end this week. So no more than 5 games the rest of the way for Vanderbilt. But with that said, you know, and I think it's because it's not just one or two superstars that's carrying this team, because there's so many guys on any given night that can help Vanderbilt win a contest, whether with the pitching or with the hitting. I mean, the fact that, you know, 13 players got drafted this year, if you add to that number those that were selected, that will be selected next year and in 2 years from now, this may be the most awarded team as far as an individual standpoint in Vanderbilt history. But already they're in the conversation. They got the most wins ever in Vanderbilt program history. But as far as just team itself, I will even throw it out there now, a better team per se than the team that won the national title in 14, and even that more talented team from 2015 that fell just one win short.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned the strength of the pitching and the hitting. I think that's what makes them such a good team, Johnny, is there's that confidence that comes from knowing that if I strike out or if I don't get this batter and they need to go to somebody else, that the next guy will pick me up. And so, you know, when you're able to go out there and perform with, that takes a lot of the pressure off. It's not like I've got to do this or else. It's, you know, I'm going to go do this. You can focus a little bit more. You can try to perform a little bit better. Or in the case of Stephen Scott, shoot, you just pick up the wrong bat and you go out there and, you know, what happens? You hit two home runs.
Yeah, I need to talk to Tim about this. Tim Corbin, head coach of Vanderbilt. I was just thinking, and one of the reasons why I love having him on every week, we talk about things that you don't have to be an athlete to apply some of the things to improve your own life. But when you think about team building, I mean, every player you talk to kind of echo the same sentiments. They talk about brotherhood. They talk about pulling for each other. And you know as well as I do, in any organization, you have those, you have some of those that show jealousy if somebody else is having success and you're not. I mean, you're talking about a team this year where, you know, some players, because of the talent ahead of them, saw limited action, and they still got drafted, for example, just because everybody understands the talent that they actually bring to the table.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. You know, if you're sitting on the bench or, you know, maybe not getting as many games as you'd like with the Commodores, you know, don't worry. People are paying close attention. And you know what? That's only going to help Tim Corbin in the future, because if a guy is, you know, if he decides he wants to go to college and get some of that experience but still protect his, you know, pro baseball status, you know, the track record is there. And let's not forget, this track record that Corbin has built is well over a decade now, 16th, 17th season. So, you know, and it just keeps kind of, it's almost continuing itself at this rate.
Teresa Walker with the Associated Press joining us. One Titans question before we let you go. Drell Casey, certainly his season did not end the way he wanted, knowing that he was not out there to be able to play because of the injury against Indianapolis with a playoff spot on the line. But at the same time, you know, Delanie Walker going down early in the season. I'm really looking forward to seeing how both of those individuals come back as far as the start of 2019.
Well, let's not forget that, you know, they weren't the only starters missing in that game. You know, Logan Ryan was out, Joe Casey was out, you know, so, you know, the one thing that we're looking forward to when they report for training camp in July is how many guys are, you know, healthy there. Now, we know that Mariota is, you know, because he took part in all of the off-season program, the mini camp. We saw Delanie Walker out there doing bits and pieces. You know, Jarrell Casey was doing a little bit. You know, Jack Conklin, Jonnu Smith started working in there outside a little bit at the very end, that we could see them on a far field with a trainer. But, you know, the health, it's the NFL. Health is just crucial. And when, you know, when you've got those, if they'd have those pieces, Johnny, I would have loved to have seen that regular season finale if all those guys were available. I think it would have been a different game. Unfortunately, it wasn't, and you can't do anything about it but move on. And we'll see what those guys can do. And, you know, let's put it this way. I think everybody is looking forward to, over in that locker room, to seeing what they can do in the opener, September 8th at Cleveland, having all those pieces available.
Hey, by the way, I'd be a little remiss if I didn't bring up Dylan Windler's name, the outstanding basketball player for Belmont. Some projections have him being selected late in the first round. How cool would that be for that Belmont program, especially with Rick Byrd hanging up after all these years?
Well, it'd be just the latest piece of incredible news for a program that, let's face it, they got an at-large bid earlier this year. So, what, you know, what else can they? Even with Rick Byrd leaving, they think they've got the right guy to replace him and try to continue what they've got going on over there. So, let's put it this way: I don't think Belmont's had a reason to pay too close attention to the draft in previous years. I'm remembering Ian Clark. But, you know, let's face it, things have changed over there at Belmont.